Welcome to the Coaching DNA Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Wyckoff. I'm also the founder of Kingdom Coaching, my consulting business in which I coach leaders. This week, my guest is Charles Small. Charles is the athletic director at Valparaiso University. During part one of my conversation with Charles, we discussed the most impactful people in his life, being yourself, staff leadership, and much, much more. Charles is a rising star in the administrative world. So without further ado, my conversation with Charles Small. Charles, thanks so much for creating some space. I know you got a trip to Drake coming up, so I appreciate you taking time. Why don't you walk us through your journey from high school to present day?
Yeah, well, first, Travis, I just want to say thank you for this opportunity. I'm a big fan of yours and just what you represent in terms of development, leadership, and just your approach. And so it's an honor to be on this call this morning. When I think about, just kind of my journey, a sense of gratitude comes over me because I just think about how things come together and you don't know it at the time. But then when you reflect back, you say, wow, all those experiences really added up and led me to where I am today. And so I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and I have wonderful parents who, and just an overall family who was a tremendous impact in my life. And when I was growing up, and this kind of led to high school, my dad was my little league coach, and he coached in Powell League and AAU for Team Detroit, eventually in high school. And my parents were divorced, and I didn't notice at the time. My dad was like a baseball guy; he loved baseball. But in order to spend more time with me, he decided to coach. And really what happened was we spent a lot of time, a lot of kind of those life lessons through sports, discipline, coaching, all that stuff. I got a really close relationship. I was going to have a close relationship regardless, but just closer. But the way he modeled leadership in our community, I saw that every day. So he was taking me to practice twice a week into the games for Little League. And you know what? He was picking up my teammates and guys that didn't have rides. He was picking them up, and I saw that. And at the time, I didn't know how to process all of that. But looking back at it, you just see that leadership in the community through sport. And my mom was such an impact in my life. She really kept me grounded in terms of values. She was a big church goer, and we would be in church on Tuesdays for prayer service. Fridays I would be with my dad, but she was in Bible study. And on Sundays it was multiple services: Sunday school, main service, and evening service. And then so, looking back at it, you just see how each of them poured into me in their own ways. And I'm just grateful for that. So fast forward to high school. I love basketball. I just had a relationship with basketball. Made varsity my freshman year. Went to Martin Luther King High School in Detroit. We won the city championship my ninth grade year. Didn't play a lot, but just had a lot of just really good talent on that team. And we were really close. Guys went to play Division I at Syracuse and Michigan. Things of that nature. Coach Benny White, great coach in the city, really poured into us and took time to also help us to grow and mature spiritually and just life with life lessons. Had an opportunity to go to Pitt as a walk-on in college. And I had some D2 offers and also I was like the second person on some D1 schools. And you know what? From academics, and they had just a really good academic program. It wasn't too far from Detroit. Opportunity to walk on at Pitt. And so Ben Holland was the coach that year, our head coach, but Ernie Ziegler was from Detroit and was connected to the AAU team, AAU circuit. And he gave me an opportunity to be a preferred walk on. And that was an awesome experience. I mean, we were in a brand new arena. We were ranked number two in the country my freshman year, went to the Sweet 16. Every year we went to the tournament, won conference championships and tournament championships in conference. And I just had this wonderful experience through sports when I was in college. But I also had all these faculty members. I had coaches, but also had faculty members who poured into me. So Ben Holland left our freshman year, went to UCLA. Jamie Dixon gets the job. He's at TCU now. And that was his first head coaching job. And he did a tremendous job. But just looking back at it, I just think about how of an important experience that was for him and how that group was for to get his career off and he had success. And then I had, like I said, these faculty members who were pouring into me, and I majored in social work. I thought I was going to go work in the NBA for NBA Cares and kind of really use basketball to impact lives. I did an internship my senior year in the compliance office where I was coordinating community service for the student athletes. Donna Sanf was a senior associate AD. She's kind of my mentor to this day. I have a call with Donna today. So all these years, we've just kept that relationship. And then what I realized was, you know, I did this internship of coordinating community service. They gave me an opportunity to be graduate assistant. And I just realized I want to work with college athletes. There's something about using sport to really impact college athletes and their lives. And so I was so fortunate to be hired full time at Pitt. We had a donor who started the life skills program there, and we really built that program. And so, you know, I really grew at Pitt, had an opportunity to go to the University of New Orleans from there. Because I got into some academic counseling at Pitt. I was working with the football team, oversaw academics. Then I went to Arkansas. Jeff Long, who was the AD at Pitt when I was a student athlete there, was the AD at Arkansas. And, really Eric Woods, the one that brought me over to Arkansas, got some leadership roles, some growth there, and eventually went to Iowa State. Where I was working with Jamie Pollard, who's one of the best in the country as an AD. And he really just gave me some opportunities to be into sport administration, to be over student athlete welfare. And that set me up kind of in this path to be prepared for this job at Valpo, where I'm the AD. And when I had the opportunity to hear President Padilla's vision, he has this bold vision of how sports can help to tell the university story and really bring publicity and help us tell the story of the university. I was bought in. I was bought in at that point, and I'm going to my second year, and it's been great. So a lot of people who poured into me. I think the common theme is sports has been there throughout my life, and over time, you know, I've developed this philosophy that life is filled with doors of opportunity, but you got to be prepared to walk through them, and so I've always taken this approach of being present, doing the best that I can in my current situation, but constant preparation. I don't know what I'm preparing for, but always pursuing the best version of myself. I think we're walking these mountains and you get to these points where you're at the top of the mountain, have that beautiful view, but the air is standing, you got to go back down. So this constant pursuit of growth and continuing getting better. I think it started, you know, in with sports as I was growing up. So
love that. Okay, Jamie Pollard, what made him so good? I mean, you highlighted him pretty quickly in our past conversations. You've mentioned him as well. Yeah, well, talk to me about Jamie Pollard.
Jamie is just awesome. You know, in our industry, you have a lot of people kind of in and out of situations, and Jamie's been at Iowa State. I believe it's 19 years now as the AD, and so that continuity is amazing. To see someone grow an organization over time. So Iowa State's athletics department looks a lot different than it did when Jamie took over. And so that was great. But what Jamie does is he allows his leadership team and folks to be in his space. And it's very easy as a leader to go into a space, say, hey, here's the decision, and let's make sure we execute. Well, Jamie takes time to get feedback from everybody, but he also, when he makes a decision, He shares with the entire group, no matter what the topic is, his line of logic and how he got there. And so for a young administrator, I was just soaking that up. I mean, to see how he thought through it. We're different people. We approach things different ways. But to see how he viewed situations and how he got to those decisions was just amazing for me as a younger administrator. So James is awesome. And he's a family guy. I mean, he's going to take time. He genuinely cares about your family, about you as a person. The department was much smaller when he started, but being able to keep his secret sauce, which is building relationships with among the people in his department, you know, that's one of the things I took from Jamie and try to apply here at Valpo. But he's one of the best. And that goes beyond just what he's done in athletics, just a great person.
So you said something I'm going to kind of dive into. You said you learned a lot from him. Obviously you guys are different people. How have you, as you're coming up under, heck, even as far back as your dad, but Ben Howland and then Jamie Dixon and then Jeff Long and Jamie Pollard, how have you, navigated that? I'm going to learn from these people, but I'm also recognizing that I am not like them, because I mean, I fell into this trap early in my career, heck, in the middle of my career. It's like, oh, that you're impacted by somebody, and you, without even knowing, you try to be like them, and then you catch yourself at some point like, dude, I'm trying to act like so and so, and this is not going well. Did you fall in that trap? And if not, how do you stay out of that trap of learn from them but know that you're not them?
Well, I think it comes down to self-awareness. You know, the more you can spend time being intentional about understanding who you are, what you represent, your core values, I think that offers clarity as to how you want to approach things and how you make decisions, and also your leadership style. And so, one of my top strengths is being a learner. And I think the more you invest in having clarity on your values and your purpose, your why, how you want to approach things, then it's just a learning opportunity, right? And so for me, you know, I love to study things that are of interest to me. And that's why even in my academic career, you know, I have a doctorate degree, things of that nature, because it wasn't tedious. It wasn't like a heavy lift, because I was learning and studying topics that are of interest to me. And I feel the same way with leaders. I love to learn about leadership. So once I think you approach it that way, you're just putting tools in your toolkit to use at certain times. And that doesn't mean you have to replicate that person. It's just a reference, you know. And so if you have a strong foundation and of self-awareness, now those are just tools that you're pulling from. And then it's a blessing when you're surrounded by talented people who do things different way. And then you can pull from those tools. You know, Jeff Long, for example, was very good at measuring results. And so he would enter processes with the end in mind. So, hey, 10 years from now, we're going to say as an organization, we've gone from point X to Y, you know, and you're going to show that, we're going to talk about that. But when you work for Jeff Long, you got to keep track of your impact. When we were academics, we had kind of these metrics to show impact among student athletes, because Jeff was measuring. If you could measure it, Jeff was going to measure it, and he was going to tell that story, how great the institution is, whether it was Arkansas, Kansas, you know, and things of that nature. And, you know, Jamie has a whole different style, right? Like his is more organic. His is more real time, being able to tackle contemporary subjects. This is where we're at today. And he's a really good speaker, right? He brings people in. So he uses that, you know, during department meetings and things of that nature. They're two different styles, but I've used both depending on the situation, you know, and I've been able to lean on those.
Love that. Jamie Dixon, what'd you learn from him in your 3 years as a student athlete under him?
You know what? So for me, when I was a student athlete, you're present real time. So it's hard to, you know, he was a great coach. And like I said, that was his first job. And just to see his tenacity and preparation. We never went into a game with not knowing all of the team's tendencies. And he was just, you know, you have gym rats in terms of basketball. He probably was that when he played at TCU, just putting up shots. He was the same way, as a coach, just watching film. And then you know all of the team's tendencies. And so you were always prepared. One of the things I've also learned is just over time watching his career, I love to see how it's evolved, right? So I had that insider view when he started. And now just more of an outsider view, you know, we stay in touch, but I'm not inside. But to see him as a veteran and to see his style of play evolve, to see just all the things he's incorporated over the years to sustain that success has been amazing. So Jamie's awesome. Just, you know, it's awesome and really happy for him and his family.
So you mentioned one of your strengths is learner. I'd love to maybe hear you riff on a couple other things that you've just been gifted with that has allowed you to have success.
Yeah. So I think, excuse me, you know, I love to learn. And so I apply that. But also from a self-awareness piece, I know that I have balconies and basements, right? Like, so there are times when you can let that strength kind of get in the way, because you feel like, I always feel like I got to have some information to make an informed decision. Well, there's times where you got to make a quick decision. And so you got to kind of lean on the information that you have, make a decision, but also, you know, you reserve the right to change that decision, right? And as long as you're communicating that, you know, I think that's important. I think I have strong empathy skills, and I'm able to, you know, there's different forms of empathy. One, a lot of people think of like how I would feel in that situation. I really push myself to have cognitive empathy of, you know what, I'm going to take the time to listen and really figure out how people are feeling in that situation and validate those feelings, those, you know, how they're seeing that situation. I think we all look at, we construct our realities in different ways. And so from an empathy standpoint, I really try to take time and ask people and empower people, let me know how you're feeling in this situation. Let's just take time there. And then we move forward with whatever the situation is. It may not be the decision that they want, but at least they know I'm going to carve out some time to understand where they're coming from. That's the social worker in me. I come from a family of social workers. My parents were social workers. My dad ran a nonprofit, The Voice Home. My mom was a school social worker. So those skills, they play themselves out in my approach. And so going back to your question of how different leaders, you know, and ADs approach things and how I'm uniquely different, I'm coming from a social work lens, right? And so that's slightly different. And I know that. So I can still use those tools, but my approach usually is different than other ADs I've worked with.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk staff. I'd love to maybe for you to give us a picture of what are the rhythms of your staff management look like? Do you have what are the meeting rhythms? How many people are in the meetings? What are your goals in the meeting? I'm going to let you kind of riff big picture on just staff development, keeping people going in the direction that you guys feel you're called to go.
Patrick Lencioni wrote a book, Death by Meeting. And if people, you know, if you're running meetings, I think it's a nice quick read. It's a fable. It's a story. And I use a lot of his approach. So his whole concept is that, you know, you have certain meetings are like a movie, right? And they're kind of drawn out. It's a plot. They're going to run. And those are called strategy meetings, right? And those take a little bit longer, right? Maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And you get the right people in the room, this thing is going to play itself out. In terms of my senior staff, that's more like a TV show, right? And, you know, he has a model that we've used where I kind of lay out like big picture topics that I want to talk about. We go over our sports update and kind of our to-do list for each week. We keep action items. And then we just do a lightning round, like what's going on in your area? What are the, you know, it's real quick, three things we need to know. And from there, we set our agenda for the day. And so that's, you know, it's an hour and a half type meeting. But it's really, we have a handout that we use. It's pretty structured and it's a well-oiled machine. But then, you know, and we're real big on action items. You know, we send those action items out. They're on the agenda. So you see them. It holds everyone accountable. There's initial, like who's responsible for that action item. And, you know, we kind of go through that rhythm. But then there's times where, you know, like, certain times in the organization or if we're going through something where we just need a quick hitter and I need to put my eyes on everybody. And that's like the ticker on ESPN, right? This is going on. This is what we need to know. This is how we need to execute in this situation for the day. And so I don't use that as much. It depends on the organization. There was a time where we were trying, I need to really execute at a different institution. And so we went into this deal where, hey, every day we're going to come in. We're not going to sit down. This is how we execute for the day. And it was a group of staff on a team that we really needed to execute. And we just came in and everybody came prepared and I was there and this is what we need to do. So it's all situational. But like I said, that book, Death by Meeting, has worked well for me. And we use that model.
Yeah. Yeah. How many are on your executive staff?
We have about eight.
Yeah.
That's a smaller group, but it's a mix of a couple of sport administrators who also have responsibility externally. And then we have a couple internal. So that's your communications and marketing tickets, you know, and then also the student athlete welfare piece of it. And it's worked well. It's not a big group, but, you know, at the end of the meetings, right before action items, we're saying, hey, what's the message back to our direct reports? And hey, what's the theme that's coming out of this meeting that we're going to reinforce when we go back? And so that you can do that when you have a smaller kind of senior staff and then they go out and lead.
Do you always lead that meeting?
Recently I have, but we're working on filling out our senior staff team and I've taken a year just to fill that out. And then the plan this year, other people is going to leave, also yeah. leave the movie. Yeah. I think it's a really good experience. I also think if people want to be AV or whatever that is, deputy or professionally, and everyone doesn't have to do that, but folks that do want to do that, I think it's a good experience for them to run the meeting and be able to speak to that.
Yeah, for sure. That's good. So let's dive into your coaches. What does it look like for you to, for lack of a better term, coach your coaches, manage coaches? How often do you and or your staff meet with whoever their, you know, sports supervisor, whoever they're over? Yeah, what does that look like for you guys?
From an education and an engagement point standpoint, we have monthly meetings. Head coaches are mandatory, but I invite all assistant coaches and things of that nature because I think it's a good learning experience. And we always hit like a compliance and academic topic. And then there's other topics that we kind of hit. My philosophy with managing coaches is that coaches are CEOs of their programs. And, you know, with that, there's a lot of responsibility. I think our coaches are our biggest asset because they directly touch our student athletes. But there's also times where they're our biggest liability or risk, right? If they don't manage their programs in an appropriate way. And so when I say they're CEOs, that doesn't mean they're just running and doing whatever they want to do, but it's that ownership and accountability to know the culture of your program, to have clarity on what type of values, what's your strategy? And so we ask our coaches for their top four levers. They have 20 in terms of how they're going to get to the next level in 2030. But I want to know your top four and I need them prioritized in ranked order. And that exercise really forces them to make some tough decisions. And we collect that information. We look to see if there's different themes. And then I'm intentional with showing how that ties back into our strategy or our priorities for the year as a department. And I really also use our sport administrators. They can do this in their own style, but I want them to have a pulse, understand the pulse and the culture of those programs. And so when we do our evaluations, that's an ongoing process that's really collaborative. So the coaches are laying out the goals. We also come back with some departmental goals. And then that's, you know, kind of the agreement for the year. We have a evaluation form that looks at student athlete feedback, looks at our administrator feedback. And so that conversation and that process is just as important as the end of the year meeting that, you know, it's the product at the end of it. Yeah. So it's really it's a dance almost of like, we're learning from them. We're trying to understand their vision, you know. We're trying to raise the ceiling a little bit to push them, but also we're responsible to raise the floor. So when they send their levers, they're also sending kind of issues in their programs. And we're really intentional. Those top four issues, we need to be dialed in to kind of remove those barriers for them to be successful. And so a lot of touch points and communication, but that evaluation document is the way we memorialize it and kind of, you know, really keep everybody accountable. And it's not something that just we look at once a year. You know, we're revisiting that throughout the year and talking through it.
And explain the levers a little bit more.
So we give them the autonomy to say, here are the top four things that could be recruit. So here's some examples. Some people would say, hey, we got to recruit, retain, and develop, right? And so then we dial into that. Well, what goes into recruiting? If that's your top thing, recruiting, like, what does that mean? Right. And so we ask questions until we get to the point of, you know what, if we were able to travel more in recruiting and have quicker turnarounds, I think we could move the needle because right now we're doing really good in our 3-hour, 4-hour radius. But wow, there's some kids out in California that we just haven't been able to get to. And I think that's what's going to get our program to the next level. Great, because that's now a budget piece. That's something we can get to, and we can put that into something we're going to focus on helping to elevate that sports program. But if they don't have clarity on where their program is in terms of development, that conversation doesn't work for me. Because if they're not recruiting in the region, or they're kind of starting off, you know, some programs like our volleyball program has sustained success. I mean, they've had 21 seasons for 17 years out of the past 21 years. That coach, she is sustaining success. And then how we're pushing her, how do we consistently get to the to postseason play in a tournament? How do we get past the NIVC, right? And so her conversation and levers are a little bit different than our softball coach is going in her second year. That's a total rebuild.
Yep.
And so we listen to that and we ask questions and we push until we refine those top four levers to be something really specific and tangible that we can get to. But that exercise is important because it forces them to have clarity on what the program needs. And my evaluation, I can't tell our softball coach anything about softball. I mean, she played for the Canadian national team and all this stuff. I don't even try, right? But my job, though, is to make sure she has a strategy. My job is to make sure she's running that program. I know what that looks like, a program that has clear vision and is ran with high efficiency and she's caring about her student athletes and they're having a good experience. I know that and I can manage that. But she has to tell me what the strategy is because you can get there different ways.
So are you meeting with each coach once a year to work through that exercise?
Yeah. So this, I lean on my sport administrators. I meet with them a couple of times a year to talk through that, just to touch base, see how it's going. And I lean on those levers just to guide conversation. But the sport administrators need to be meeting with them regularly to understand that, because I go to my sport administrators and if I want to know what's going on with that program, I expect them to understand the culture, what's going on. Hey, does this coach need a little bit of help in terms of strategy and how do we help support them? But once again, the coach is the CEO. So that's on them to have a vision and put a plan together. And I'm just looking to invest. And yeah. So if I earn that trust and you all, it's worth investing. We're going to invest in all the programs, but we're going to make investments in those levers if we believe it. But that's on the coach to help us to understand that. So